Welcome to the Simply Authentic podcast, where we hope to embolden you with discipline, personal growth, and abundance to live your most authentic life. The Simply Authentic Podcast. I'm Tanya Murfin.
And I'm Angie Mullings. And we have a guest in studio today. We're very happy to welcome Tom Douglas. He is the CEO of JMark and also the author of Adapt or Die. So he's a published author and keynote speaker. He does all kinds of things. And we're going to get into a lot of topics today. So buckle up.
Hello, welcome. Tom. Welcome. So glad you're here.
Yeah. I'm grateful.
Yeah.
So let's get started with you just introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about your background, who you are, and then get into JMark.
Yeah, so I have been at JMark for, I guess it's going on 30 years now. So I joined the organization as a level one engineer after I was in the Navy for 4 years. So I fell in love with technology when I was in the military. Mm-hmm. And when I decided to get out, I leaned into the computer world and databases and all things geeky. and so when I joined the company, I was... I thought I was hot stuff, and as it turns out, I didn't really know that much. But I had some great mentors, and they helped me work my way up through the organization. My organization management skills kind of kicked in from the military, and I worked my way up through JMark, and then bought the company in 2001. Okay. We had to downsize the company to about 6 people, and we've grown it now. We're just approaching 130 people inside the organization now. So we specialize in IT managed services, which is supporting the IT infrastructure for small and medium-sized businesses around the country, really, but mostly here in the Midwest. Okay. And so we'll step in and we take care of security and we take care of backup management, help desk services, servers, cloud solutions, all the above. So we like geeking out on all the stuff that happens behind the scenes that people are like, I don't know how it works, but I just need it to.
We're glad you're there because we're not geeky. So we need your help for sure. So what's the biggest problem that you see? We were talking beforehand and you go in, somebody calls you up, and we're known in Southwest Missouri, we have tons of small businesses. So someone calls you and they want you to come in and evaluate their situation, their IT situation. What does that look like for someone?
Well, the first thing that we do is have a conversation about what an engagement with us looks like and make sure that we're on the same page, that we're kind of aligned on the future, what the challenges are, make sure that we can solve those problems because sometimes we're just not the right fit. There's a lot of organizations that are specialized where we don't have the knowledge inside of our business to solve the problem. So, and we don't want to, step into a situation where we can't create value. So the number one thing is making sure that we're aligned, we can solve the problems, and then we would do a network eval for that organization. So we're looking at all of the risk in the environment, the design, the server infrastructure, or network, the way that organization connects to the internet. So we have minimum standards that we have to have in place for us to be successful. We train our team to operate in certain ways, and if the infrastructure is just way outside of the norm, then we either have to get it into the norm or then it's not the right fit otherwise. So it's about having that conversation and assessing what they've got and what the gap is in order to get it closed. You know, we were talking, one of the biggest challenges is in security, backup management, and design. You know, a lot of people think, well, I'm going to use my computer until the keys fall off, kind of a thing. You know, that creates lots of challenges as it relates to security management because the updates that are coming out and the vulnerabilities that need to be managed and things like that. And so the computer will become slow and almost unusable long before it actually fails. And so lifecycle management and alignment around those kind of things is a part of that conversation.
Since you said that, is there a standard for how often you should replace your computer?
Yeah, it kind of depends on whether or not you're a power user and how your applications run. But 3 to 5 years is usually the window. And, you know, your heavy users, usually around 3 years. You know, somebody, especially if it's an application like a CAD application where it's really intensive and there's lots going on and they need to be able to run kind of the latest technology and the latest versions of the software. But if you think like a bank teller, you know, it's kind of just running a plain application, not too intense, but needs to be secure. You know, 4 or 5 years is fine.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. So your clientele, there's no... Is there a lane you stay in with your clientele, or can it be anybody?
Well, we specialize in a few different areas. So our biggest industry is helping hotels, but not point of sale. So so it's kind of the back end side of it. And we do a massive amount in banking and in healthcare, professional services, insurance services, things like that. We stay away from retail. And most of the time, businesses that we have start around 20 users and then go up to around 500 or 600.
Okay.
We were talking about cybersecurity before we got started, and being a franchise, we were required to have cybersecurity for the first cybersecurity insurance. Am I saying that right?
Cyber liability insurance.
For the first time ever this year. Okay. And I fought it because I had to have a $3 million policy, and I'm not that big of a company. But so can we talk about the importance of, so you've educated me this morning. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about the importance of that, and at what time in their business that they might want to look at that?
Well, I think, you know, at what point is a little bit different for each organization, depending on the size and those kind of things. But it's about risk mitigation. I mean, you have insurance on your building in order to protect it. You know, Richard Hollis is a good friend of mine and a client of ours, and he says, you know, years ago you had insurance to protect your physical things. Now you have insurance to protect your digital things, because that's actually where the value of most businesses live. And a lot of people have a trouble making that transition into, you know, protecting my digital assets. And so that's what we're talking about. So it is expensive and it is a transition. But when your primary business assets are pieces of paper that you're scanning in, or forms that you're filling out online, or whatever it may be, and you've got social security numbers, you've got income levels, you've got all of those things.
Bless you.
Thank you. You have risk in there that if that data is compromised, then your whole client list may be compromised and on the dark web and all the things. And so as it relates to your reputation as a business owner, protecting your business for the future, putting that insurance in place is an important thing that, that we recommend all of our clients put in place. If you're in business and you have sensitive data in digital assets, you should probably have at least a minimum level of coverage.
So tell us about a compromise. We were, you were sharing war stories before we started here. And I think the impression that Angie and I are left with is how important your job is when you enter one of your clients. And because they've called and said, 911, we think we have a breach. So walk us through what that looks like from your side, and give us, you know, our listeners that are business owners, give them a perspective they should have.
Yeah, it's a scary world out there. I'll just start by saying that. And no organization can be 100% protected, because the bad guys are going to find a way to trick a human. And while we can control all the geeky things to a certain level, we can't control people. And people still click on things. And, you know, one of the most common ways that, that people let the bad guys in and compromise their environments is because they click a link on their phone because they're going really fast and they're thumbing through email while they're sitting in line or waiting in the car or whatever it is. They click on that link, the bad guys get in there through the email, through the cloud system. So it could be Office 365 or Google. And once the bad guys get in there, then they start going crazy. So they're downloading your inbox, your sent items, they're looking at all your contacts, and then trying to use that information to get other, to other places inside your network, depending on how it may be configured. So the volume that the attacks are happening continues to increase. AI is making it easier. it, you know, if you go back a couple of years, an email that was a phishing email was a little more obvious because it was a little broken English. It, you know, you could see some inconsistencies in it, things like that. With AI, the bad guys can use the ChatGPT or whichever tool that they want to write a very well-written email that looks very legitimate. And if they have history on an individual, as an example, where they have, maybe they've compromised somebody who you had communicated with several times, they can actually take your emails and write in a tone that sounds like you, and then use that to attack other employees on a network or use it to just see what kind of people and interactions you have that might be legitimate and make it look very authentic. And so it's very easy to create a very sophisticated, very well drafted phishing attack for today, you know, any business owner today. And as a result of those things, the protections, we talked about two-factor authentication as being one of the number one things that people need to have in place. Because when you don't have that, all it is a password. You know, you click on it, you type in your username, your password in order to quote-unquote, you know, authenticate or check into your email. What's happening on the backside of that is the bad guys are making you, or they've created a website that looks, to log into email, that looks exactly like your email, and you can't tell any difference. I mean, they are really good at mirroring a web page. And so when you think you're logging in and putting in your username and password, all they're doing is just harvesting that data, and then they're going straight over to the real email servers and putting that information in. And in some environments, they can even bypass the two-factor authentication through that process, because if it pops up and they can capture the cookies and the cache of what's going on in the environment, they're snagging that and then going to your email as well. And so we're starting to see those attacks kind of bump up to a new level. So long story short, to answer your question, if we have never worked with the organization before, it's really challenging to recover an environment if the ransomware has been deployed, if it's totally compromised, backups aren't available, things like that. You know, it's tough. We can help navigate through the process, but getting the data is lengthy and quite challenging. The average recovery time, if somebody is fully hit with ransomware, and even if they've got some versions of a backup, it generally takes 30 to 45 days before businesses are up and operational fully again. It might take 2 or 3 days to get kind of key systems back in place, but it's oftentimes longer than that. 4 or 5 days is not unusual in a bad ransom attack. And, you know, the Choice healthcare system, it took them, you know, I think it was 14 days before they had some of the systems back online, and it was closer to 45 days before it was totally back online. And then if you look at the compromise, I don't remember the name of the organization, but it was all the car agencies. I don't know if you heard about that one.
Yes.
It took them about 2 weeks before they could sell cars online using the systems again. So these are examples of how devastating it can be to solve the problem. The benefit of having us in the network and managing the network prior to the bad guys is we have a certain set of standards and a certain set of activities that we do in the environment. And so oftentimes when these attacks happen, if we know and detect it properly, we can get it solved in 20 minutes and we're done. There's not a whole lot that has to be done after that. We can kick the bad guys out. We can find out if there was any data that was exfiltrated and move on, because most of the time we can catch it before there's a real compromise. But if you don't have those tools in place that alert you to the bad behaviors that are going on and some of the things that indicate a compromise, then, you know, the bad guys are there. And again, they can be in there for 30, 45, 75 days, and you never know it if they're just trying to sniff around and find how to do a deeper deeper dive into your network and get more digital assets.
Do you have any kind of industry? I'm probably going to answer this myself before I even get the question out. Is there any industry that is more at risk because there's more data to get? It's more interesting to the criminals.
Yeah. Well, anything that has personal information, so think healthcare. Yes. Because there's social security numbers, there's healthcare records, those all sell on the dark web, you know, to people who want to steal identity theft and things like that. And, you know, there's been false Medicaid and Medicare filings from health records and all of the things. So anything like that that they can get their hands on, then it can become quite valuable for folks. So in terms of that, there's a lot of focus in the healthcare arena. Mm-hmm. There's also a lot of focus on another kind of fraud that's called CEO fraud. So organizations that have a CFO in place, they'll mimic the CEO's correspondence and send an email to the CFO and say, hey, I need to wire $50,000 to this organization at this wiring address, and you know, you're using these wiring instructions. And in that environment, the CFO oftentimes will call or text or something. And sometimes the bad guys will say something like, well, I'm in a meeting, I can't take a call right now, so you know, just send it and we'll talk about it later. So they're trying all of these things. So we recommend that there's always a face-to-face process that has to occur. If your CEO is traveling, it's not that unusual to authorize wires. You know, in your business, it happens all the time. But you have to verify that it's legitimate. And so when you get these random emails or text messages, you just have to make sure that it's the real deal. And the banks are doing they're doing their best. They're doing a good job of trying to monitor this and make sure that all these transfers are legitimate. But again, you know, the bad guys they're getting smarter. AI is making it more challenging to detect the fraud. And in today's world, you know, there was one recently, there was a circumstance where CFO fraud occurred for $1 million. Not a small amount.
Right.
The CFO thought that it was weird and said, hey, let's jump on a Zoom call. And they did. But the bad guys had an avatar that looked exactly like the CEO, sounded exactly like the CEO. They carried on a full conversation for a period of time about the wire transfer, and he was satisfied that it was legitimate and then sent the money. And so the bad guys are using these AI tools are able to do some pretty capable things. So, you know, we think about being online and all they need is a couple of minutes of you talking in your video and they can imitate you full on. So the bad guy is sitting behind the curtain, you know, and he's saying the things, but it's translating that, if you will, into the face of the CEO that sounds like the CEO and fooled the CFO.
That is so scary. Yeah. Speaking of that, I saw you for the first time at 417 Biz in the spring, and you did that exact thing, gave an example of Logan Aguirre, the publisher at 417 Magazine. And I had never seen a real life example of someone I knew, and it was spooky.
It was scary. Yes.
Because you knew, I think we were paying attention to the pauses, you know, but it was her. It was her voice. It was her mannerisms. That happening in real life, that is really frightening.
It's happening more and more. Sure. And the technology is getting better and faster. Yeah. I mean, it historically speaking, well, not even that far back. I mean, 6 months ago, you needed a little bit more video and voice in order to do it. Some of the technologies can do something as simple as that in 30 seconds.
Gosh.
And it was a, you know, what was it, 2 minutes or 3 minutes, something like that. And not a full conversation with the CFO. So, you know, 20 minutes in a podcast or something like that, like we're doing.
You're right.
They've got it. Yeah. That's all they need.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So we had also talked about actual ransoms having to be paid before we started. How normal is that? How often do you see large companies or even small companies having to actually pay a ransom amount to get their data back?
Well, you know, the volume of ransomware situations has diminished a little bit over the last year because people, you know, just got hammered during COVID, after COVID, all of those kind of things. And so we saw a spike during that time. And the cyber liability insurance companies and CEOs were just made aware that they had to put extra protections in place.
Right.
That has been somewhat successful in reducing the number of attacks. But, you know, so while it's gone down, it's still very often. I mean, 2 weeks ago, we had the car compromise where they got hit. And so it happens every day somewhere mm-hmm. and dozens of times per day. Mm-hmm. What a lot of people don't know is that the bad guys in this arena aren't guys drinking Mountain Dew in a basement. They're legitimate businesses that operate overseas that we can't go and get. And they come to work every day just like we do. They work at a desk. They have health insurance. They are paid a salary with bonuses for the successful deployment of a compromise. Mm-hmm. And so they're the smartest, brightest hackers in the world. Mm-hmm. And so these legitimate businesses that are operating are constantly attacking organizations. We've had situations where we were called into an organization and the bad guys had been in there for some period of time that we don't know prior to us walking in the door, but long enough that they were able to get into the CFO's email, look at the cyber liability insurance policy, find out what the maximum coverage payout would be, and then they deleted the backups, and then they launched the ransomware in the environment. And guess what the value of the mm-hmm. ransomware demand was? The exact limit of the cyber policy, because they knew that they could get it.
Yep.
And so we're seeing it still, even though the things are better than they were a couple of years ago, it's still very common. And the bad guys would rather steal your money than go earn it legitimately.
Sure.
So we just have to constantly be evaluating and upgrading security and being aware of the new attack methods mm-hmm. and styles and like the phishing emails that are changing now and how that's occurring. And so a lot of our job is educating end users about what not to click on and what to do if they do. And organizations, you know, historically they've been, I think it's better than it used to be, but a lot of organizations would kind of shame somebody who made the mistake. Mm-hmm. But in today's world, you can't do that. It's like you need to celebrate somebody that thinks they made a mistake as soon as they did so that we can respond quickly. Because again, 20 minutes is about the window, maybe an hour before, you know, we're in big trouble. And mm-hmm. so the faster we can get in and get things taken care of, the better. So you want people raising their hand saying, something's weird.
Yeah.
You know, we've got to get that done.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that kind of leads me into something that I wanted to talk to you about, because I've seen you a couple of times. When you walked in, I said, I feel like I know you because I've seen you on stage. I've seen presentations you've done. But I know that culture is a big thing with JMARC. And we, most of the time when we have business owners, entrepreneurs, and we talk about culture, it's very important within our organizations. Mm-hmm. And you went from, what did you say, 6 to now 130,
yeah.
So talk to us a little bit about culture. And you're in an environment, your business is being on top of things all the time. Your industry moves lightning speed, right? So talk to us about building culture in an arena that I would guess burnout is
very
pretty
common. It is.
And what it takes to build an environment where people aren't shamed for raising their hand for mm-hmm. something.
Well, it's hard. First of all, I'll say that. I think CEOs across the country, across the world, struggle with building the best culture that they can. You know, a lot of the things that we've learned, we've had some incredible mentors, we've had some incredible coaches along the way that have helped us and navigated mm-hmm. through. And truth be told, we have screwed it up plenty of times. I mean, we've made lots of mistakes. But we were fortunate to win the 417 Best Places to Work this last year. And so we've really leaned into what it means to put in a great culture in place. And, you know, I think it starts with a foundation of really getting serious about your core values. Mm-hmm. If you think about how you operate as a family, you almost have unwritten rules in the household. Mm-hmm. You have a language mm-hmm. that you can speak to, and everybody mm-hmm. kind of understands how we act and how we operate.
Right.
And that creates safety, and that creates a mm-hmm. comfort level. And if you don't have your core values defined and how you're going to operate and how you're going to behave and the language that you're going to use inside the business and your way of solving problems, as an example, if you mm-hmm. don't have those things defined, people don't feel safe. You know, Google did a study several years back now about the what creates the highest productive teams in the world. And they looked at intelligence, and they looked at team dynamics, and they looked at skill sets, and they looked at the mix of the individuals in the team. But the one thing that surpassed all of them was psychological safety. And so when you think about what it means to have that psychological safety in an organization and in a team, it's I can raise my hand when I've made a mistake and I'm not going to get shamed. I'm not going to get fired for making a mistake. It's an opportunity for me to learn and grow. And, and we're going to celebrate the growth, not punish just, a mistake that all of us are going to make. And so when you create a culture both of safety and where everybody is operating with that sense of feeling, then it creates like a home environment. It creates that comfort level that you want to be around. And at the end of the day, the thing that we've learned is that the good people want to do good work. And so it's our job as leaders to create an environment where they're surrounded by people who have that same belief system and who they enjoy being around. And when you make a bad hire, which we all do, and you get a bad apple in there, you have to fire fast. And when you have good people, you have to give them multiple chances and coach and grow with them and help them to understand. I think in today's world, more than ever, it's really important to lean into the potential of somebody's success. I think a lot of people have a false ceiling above them, a glass ceiling, if you will, in terms of their potential, because I think that there's just not enough of that the belief in what they're capable of. They haven't heard that enough. They haven't been encouraged, and so it's something that we lean into. It's like, nope, you can do more. You're more capable. You're sharper. You're we believe in you. We're going to get you the training. We're going to create the opportunity. Here's some areas that you need to improve upon. Here's some areas that we want to celebrate. But at the end of the day, we know that your potential is here, and you're here. So how can we help you to realize that? And when you believe in people that much, the culture just evolves, and it is one of the greatest gifts. It's like not as much as raising kids, but it's similar.
Sure, it's similar is. Along it's way. Another family you've created.
That's good. That's exactly right.
And Angie and I know a little bit about that, just with trying to create a culture in our real estate companies. And I know that if that is not on your mind whatsoever from the beginning, because I've seen this happen with other places, you can't just suddenly insert it, right? It starts with the way you treat them, the way you feel. They see the way you feel. And I think that just emanates, right?
Yes. Absolutely. And
So culture was always the biggest, most important thing to me. And really, it was my only objective when we opened our company. And I made sure my partners knew that. And they were like, You go, girl, because they wanted nothing to do with it. But we all together helped create that culture. So
it's foundational.
I can really appreciate that.
I think of it almost like a bank. I call it a people bank. You're going to have to constantly invest in people, and you need to always have a balance there, because at some point shit's going to hit the fan and you're going to need to call on that, whether it's, hey, I need a late night, or we need to come in on the weekend, or we've had this big problem and we need to come together and solve it. And you're going to need them to bring their A game and their best. And if you haven't invested in them and you haven't deposited into that people bank, then they're not going to lean into it and help you navigate through those tough times. I feel like, as leaders, it's our job to trust first and to invest first. And once we earn that trust and confidence that they've joined the right organization, when those tough times happen, it's almost a no-brainer. People are willing to go the extra mile and to make things happen.
And you train them that way, right?
And when you said core principles, I mean, you started off the conversation with, we have people that we have we have expectations of the people that we work with.
Yes.
The companies that we help, and those things have to be in place. So you're willing to say no to a client. And that is important, I think, as well, because you've got to know your lane, right?
Yes.
We can't be everything to everyone. And I think that helps with your internal culture as well, because they're not trying to do a million things, because you've said, these are the parameters.
Yes.
These are the people we can help. And we want you to be really good at helping this set of clients that we have.
You've nailed it, and that goes for both clients and for people, for your own teammates, because they're you have to say. I mean, you guys have seen rock star salespeople, and it's like, oh yeah, you know, I would love to have that, but they are not a culture fit. They're toxic to your organization,
right.
100%. And they will tear you down. And so, whether it's knowing your lane and your clients and being experts at what you do, or knowing your lane with your people, I think it's a really common thing. And I'll tell you, we were not good at that in the early days. Sure. I mean, we said yes to bad people, bad clients, bad situations, and it just created chaos in the business. And and eventually we were like, no more. We have got to get this nailed down. And it wasn't a fast process, because you've got to retrain the whole company, to your point earlier, that if you don't start with it, getting it implemented is really tough.
Yeah.
And so anytime you shift standards around something like that, it's a multi-year process oftentimes,
for
and
sure.
it was for us.
I'm glad that you said that. Sorry, I'm glad you said that, because I think we live in this fast-paced environment. This we all want things right away, and you start to build culture, and you're going to have times when you don't hire the right people, that the people that are within your four walls are not the right people, that you've got to adjust, and there's going to be stops and starts, and you know, it's a long process. Like you said, it cannot be done overnight.
It can't be. And, you know, in our organization, as an example, our agreements, both with our clients, with our clients generally are 3 years. So if you make a mistake in entering an engagement that's wrong, it's wrong for both organizations, potentially for 3 years, unless you find a way to gracefully go in different directions. And that's a challenge in and of itself. And the same is true with people. I mean, while you want to make sure that if you make a bad hire that you get them out quickly, sometimes you don't actually recognize it for a while. And it's like, well, I think they're okay. I think they're okay.
Right.
Maybe they're okay. And then eventually it's like, oh, we're a year.
I knew this 3 years ago.
And then it's like, well, now what do I do? It's not like after the 90 days, it's like, hey, you know what? This isn't a good fit. It's you know, you there's people's families and there's things involved.
That's
and so
right.
it does take time, and we're human, we make mistakes. And and one of the things that we had to learn in those circumstances as leaders is we had to own it up to our team. We made a bad hire. We made a mistake. You know, this is on us. Sorry, you had to deal with the chaos. We thought the person was right. But it turned out that wasn't the case, and we've got to move on. And if you own it, then that shows that humility and that ability for them to own up to mistakes as well. And so it's leading by example through situations like that.
Absolutely. So you are I'm going to say renowned speaker, because from what I read online in researching you, you're in high demand to come in and teach about leadership and business development, and your not only your AI knowledge and your, you know, your background of IT is obviously immense. Angie and I deal with young agents and sometimes not even young agents, but young in the business.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so building leadership skills has been in the realm of our business for, you know, the last 10, 15 years.
Right.
So what are the lessons that you teach when you're on the road traveling to speak to people? What are your leadership lessons? Because if you had known what you know now 30 years ago when you got the company down to 6 people, right? If we had that knowledge then, think of where you'd be now. But that's not the way life works.
No.
What are your famous speeches you give, and what are those lessons you teach people?
Well, I think it starts with, you know, be confident, but be humble. You know, you need to know your expertise, and you need to know where you're not. And own it, and don't be afraid to own it. People want to work for people that they can relate to. And if you try to put on a front and try to be something more than you are, people see right through it, and nobody wants to work for a liar or somebody who's trying to be something more than they are, and all those kind of things. So be yourself, get comfortable with that. What we know about human psychology is that we're the most happy in life when we can be our truest self. mm-hmm. when there's no false fronts, there's mm-hmm. there's no personas mm-hmm. that I have to put on. It's yep. just, yeah. this is me. Yeah. And when you can live that way as a leader, that creates that authentic bond with those that are around you. So first and foremost, just be yourself
yeah.
and be and own that and be comfortable with that in terms of your strengths, your weaknesses, your shortcomings, and all the things. Mm-hmm. And then I think that it's really important that leaders understand that they have to change hats a lot. Yeah. And be okay with that. Mm-hmm. As an example, sometimes you need to be a leader, sometimes you need to be a manager, sometimes you need to be a counselor,
yep.
sometimes you need to be a friend, mm-hmm. Sometimes you need to be a coach, and sometimes you need to be a hard ass. I mean, it just...
Amen to all of that. Yeah. We wear all of those hats. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you've had these circumstances when I know that you have where you're going to go in and you're going to talk to somebody thinking you're going to have a little bit of a challenging kind of a manager conversation. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, your performance isn't there. You're not making the calls. You're not doing the work. I really need you to step up. You know, I know you can do it. I've seen you do it in the past, but it's not going all of a sudden. You know, well, I just found out that my mom has cancer. Switching hats. Now I'm a counselor.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. No idea that was going on in your world. Right. What can we do to support you?
Right.
Yes.
And so I think, you know, being willing and capable and ready yeah. to change those hats at the drop of a hat, if mm-hmm. you will, pardon the pun,
yeah.
is absolutely critical for people. And to know that that's your job, is to support people and lift them up first and mm-hmm. foremost. So whether it's in their skills, whether it's their personal life or whether it's, you know, just in understanding the business and growing to the next level as a professional, those are all responsibilities that we mm-hmm. have. But in the day-to-day of it, shit happens. I mean, yeah. things yeah, change, stuff goes on. People's yeah. lives are more important than their jobs. And yeah. so yes. we have to understand and recognize how we inside of our organization, we describe it as serving the whole human. So here's their professional chunk, and then, you know, their parent chunk and their spouse chunk, and mm-hmm. you know, maybe they're a son or a daughter that has parents that are still alive and going and yeah. you know, or dealing with nursing home challenges or whatever mm-hmm. it may be, yeah. all the things that hit us in life. And so when we create the psychological safety, those truths come out, mm-hmm. and so we know yeah. what we need to be in order to support and serve them. And I think one of the I could talk about this for hours, but I think one of the most important things that we touched on a little bit earlier is that we have to have the trust in place first, mm-hmm. Both ways. So we have to earn that trust so that when those tough times happen or that circumstances are there, that the bond is in place. If we don't have trust and those tough situations come along, whether it's a business thing or a personal thing,
right.
they're really tough to navigate through because people, they don't feel safe. They don't feel secure. If I tell mm-hmm. my boss, they might let me go, or they may be judgmental right. about my performance. But if the trust is there, it's like, hey, I've got this personal thing. And I have confidence that I'm not going to get fired for bringing it up, or I'm mm-hmm. not going to get judged.
Exactly.
And so establishing all of those things up front through one-on-ones and great conversations and what it means to have a real foundation and a relationship in place so that you can navigate through the tough times that we know we're going to have at some point, no matter yeah. who it is and what happens in life.
Mm-hmm. For yeah. sure. Always. Yeah.
That's good stuff.
That was a great answer.
That's good stuff. Yeah. I was brought out a book I'd read several years ago about, it's called Abundance by Deepak Chopra. Okay. Deepak. Anyway, he was talking about ego, and that the ego-driven answers are, I'm above everyone else. I can't be vulnerable. I can't, you know. Mm-hmm. And everything you just said is about leaving ego behind.
Yes.
Everything yeah. that you said.
Yes.
So, and we, I think, just general human nature, we have a hard time with that. Mm-hmm. We can't separate ego from us.
Yes.
Most of the time. Right.
Yeah, I think that the most successful leaders figure out that ego should come from the success of others mm-hmm. that we serve. And mm-hmm. and if our confidence, ego, comes mm-hmm. from not the fact that I'm who I am, but I was able to serve a bunch of other individuals and help them to be successful,
right.
and that's what gives me joy, and that's what gives me hope, and that's mm-hmm. what gives me energy,
yeah.
mm-hmm. then that serves us well. But we think it's the other way around,
right.
naturally.
Yes.
And I think yeah. that's a farce. I don't think that's the truth. I was fortunate to learn that in the Navy by having a really bad lieutenant mm-hmm. Who mm-hmm. was ego man. man. And he taught me how to never be a leader because he walked around with a chip on his shoulder and he treated everyone really poorly and was hateful. And when we really did a great job, it would be, you know, kind of a sideways high five. You know, there was no celebrations of people. But then he was getting all the awards and the accolades and he was, you know, all the things. And so what I learned through that process is that's the guy I never want to be. Exactly. So my whole career has been fighting against that to make sure that that never exists inside of our organization.
Yeah. Well, it's a great lesson to learn and not fun to go through, but good that you went through it that young.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because it helped you develop this lifetime of leading that has been more on point.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I've been very fortunate to have those experiences and great coaches along the way because we can't all, none of us can do it without
them.
No. And I think it's a constant battle. I'm constantly asking myself, who answered that? Was that your ego or was that you? You know, it's a constant because it's just human nature. It's who we are. So it's, I do want to ask you about your book because in addition to being a keynote speaker, you also are a published author. Adapt or Die is the name of your book. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, again, it kind of stems from this environment of I have been exposed to some incredible people over the years, and I've learned all of these lessons. And one of the things that I think ego would tell us in running a business is that we've got to solve these problems because my problems are unique. And the truth is almost all problems have already been solved by somebody. And so all we need to do is to get access to the people and the resources to solve the problems that we have that they figured out 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 2 years ago, whatever. And so after being in business for over 20 years, I was like, I have got to pay this forward. There's a bunch of information and a bunch of just coaching and learnings that I have had over the years that have helped us to be successful as an organization. And I felt like I was given a gift in some of the exposure to these incredible people, and I just wanted to make sure that I did whatever I could to share that. And so the book, the principle of the book is what I call the algorithm of success. And so it's the components. It starts with leadership that you have to have in business in order for the business to be successful.
Okay.
And so it gets into leadership, culture, strategy, financial management, operations, processes, all of the things that we learn kind of the hard way along the way, trying to accelerate that learning cycle that business owners, we all have to go through at some point or another, and just trying to speed that up for some folks and hopefully save them from stubbing a couple of the toes that I did along the way.
That's fantastic.
Sounds like we need that book.
We need that book.
Well, I did it in a story format, so it kind of has a fable along with it, little bit of a story that weaves it all the way through. And so it's not, you know, I found that just traditional business books were sometimes a little bit hard to work your way through. And so I was able to work with a coach, a writing coach, and she helped me to weave a good story through it and to make it a little bit more digestible and kind of fun along
Love
the way.
Love them.
That's
great.
It's been great.
Good.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So as we start to wrap this up, tell us what the average person needs to know, and I point at you and I, Angie.
We're very average.
The average person needs to know about AI. What warning or what good things? There are some good things about AI.
It's going to be incredible.
Right? We're all using it in our businesses now in some measure. So what does the average person need to know?
Well, first and foremost, if you're not working with it, get on board.
Right.
You know, I said during the Think Summit, you know, it's a freight train that's coming and it's either going to run you over or you can get on board. You know, the average business is going to be driven hard into this arena, whether it's loan decisioning that we were talking about earlier and some of the technologies that are shifting there. Legal briefs, I mean, it is everywhere in terms of just day-to-day operations.
Yeah.
If you're not sure what to do, get some help. There's lots of help and resources online. All you have to do is search it out. There's you know, tons of people that are trying to make a name for themselves, but do a great job in training on YouTube, and and you can get access to it. Don't be afraid of it. If you think of how many business owners do you know that run their business without Excel?
Right.
Very few.
Yeah. Very few.
Yeah.
And AI is going to be the Excel of the future. Mm-hmm. If you don't have it at your hip, it is going to hold you back as a business owner, and mm-hmm. it is going to limit your ability to be successful. So embrace it and get mm-hmm. used to yeah. it and, mm-hmm. and just really learn how it applies. And some of the fun things that people don't know, like ChatGPT, which is, you know, the most common and, mm-hmm. and popular out there, but you can go to it and say, how can I learn to use you more effectively? Mm-hmm. And ask it. And it will tell you. And you can
tip.
Say, yeah. how can I use you in the mortgage industry? And it mm-hmm. will tell you.
Yeah.
How can I use you in healthcare? How can I use you in banking? And mm-hmm. there's tons of examples that
love
it
that.
Will provide you in that arena that really do make it, get you started and do those kind of things. And so, first and foremost, learn it, get used to it, embrace it, and be a part of it. In terms of what it's going to do, one of the problems that we see coming as it relates to small business. So I read an article, actually, I think it was just this morning or late last night, that the pace at which large companies are embracing AI is about 10 times that of small business. Mm-hmm. So let's play that forward 5 or 10 years, and what that turns into is that really big companies are going to be able to be a lot more efficient, a lot more effective,
right.
and drive prices down and do lots of things. So a problem that we see coming in the world is that small businesses need to have an infrastructure where they can be really successful with AI.
Mm.
And so we're working on how we can take existing data that businesses have mm-hmm. and move it into an environment so that it helps them to run their business more effectively. We're not there yet as an organization, mm-hmm. but that's mm-hmm. that is a product that I'm passionate about figuring out mm-hmm. so that it's somewhat agnostic to the industry. Obviously, mm-hmm. healthcare is different than financial services.
Right.
Lots of differences. But if you can build an ecosystem that has a lot of the major tools in it, like mm-hmm. how you bring in the data, how you ask it questions, how you create the bots on the fly that solve certain problems, like if we can get good at that for the small to medium-sized business, mm-hmm. then I think it's going to make a huge difference in the success of small businesses in the future.
Yeah. Wow.
So that's an area that we're a little bit worried about, and that's why I think mm-hmm. it's really important to learn kind of that public-facing ChatGPT side now,
mm-hmm.
because mm-hmm. eventually we're going to have to privatize that and apply
right.
that to our specific businesses, and those skills will transfer fairly well.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a great tip for small business owners and people just saying, that doesn't affect me.
Yeah.
I can't possibly use that in my mm-hmm. business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's like the accountant saying, well, I still need my ledgers. I have to do it on paper.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Well, we could talk forever.
We really
have so many different topics to cover. But thank you so much for bringing your expertise to our listeners. We appreciate the conversation.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for letting me be here.
Yeah. Learned a lot today.
Yeah, it was good.
Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you again to Gershman Mortgage for allowing us to record here. And we hope you all have a great day.
See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Simply Authentic podcast. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram.
Be sure to listen to us on your favorite podcasting app.